I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm not
America's sweetheart. This is the Annie Fry Show.
Jill Biden increased significantly today. We had her chief of staff and her self-proclaimed work husband there for what we planned to be an eight-hour deposition, and he kept invoking the Fifth Amendment, and his lawyer finally said, you can ask all the questions you want. We're going to invoke the Fifth Amendment on every question. So we need to know, was Jill Biden the one calling the shots? While Joe Biden was incapacitated, Anthony Bernal had an opportunity to answer those questions today. He chose to invoke the Fifth Amendment. So I would say her odds significantly increased, Sean.
So there you have James Comer talking about, in charge of the House Oversight Committee, talking about the possibility that we might actually see Jill Biden be called in to testify and potentially plead the Fifth. That's one of those questions. I might ask this tomorrow. On the YouTube poll, do you think that pleading the Fifth implies automatic guilt? Because it doesn't. But that's kind of the way we talk about it. If you plead the Fifth, we've had people on both sides of the aisle certainly having that conversation about where they get compelled to come in to testify, they plead the Fifth, and then the other side certainly goes, oh, yeah, absolutely, that's automatically guilty. And we're like, oh, no, it's their Fifth Amendment right. And so we argue for our side. You can't just say that the Fifth Amendment does not imply guilt only when your side is the one pleading the Fifth. And if you don't trust the people who are in charge, then you why would you testify? Why would you put yourself in a position to answer questions with a corrupt Justice Department, with a corrupt system that is out to get you? Now, I've watched President Trump, and so have you, go through a lot of lawfare through a Justice Department that was very, very aggressive in prosecution, but also in manipulation and fabrication of information. Hans von Spakovsky is going to be with us in about 15 minutes from now, a little bit less than 15 minutes from now. And I think I think that we are going rapidly into a direction of this administration where it's not so much about legislation. It's not so much about the Republican slim majority in the House, the Republican majority in the Senate, trying to get things done. We did that with the Big Beautiful Bill. But now we are working towards the other thing that I know a lot of us voted for Donald Trump for, which is to make sure that we clean up the justice system in our country. We don't want, what is it? A two-tier justice system, or maybe even more tiers. Lord knows that we've watched the Biden administration, the Democrats, the deep state, set up rules for people who think differently, where you get held to a different set of standards. A lot of people will point to those folks imprisoned after January 6th, right to a speedy trial. Why is that available for some and not available for all? Do you trust Kash Patel and Pam Bondi? I think that is a key question that you have to ask yourself right now about the future of where this administration takes rooting out the deep state. You might be in a position to say, there's no deep state. That's all just a conspiracy, ruse, blah, blah, blah. I don't think that's most of us. The question that we likely have to ask ourselves and would probably differ from time to time in, how big is the deep state? How broad is the deep state? How old is the deep state? How powerful is the deep state? Our poll for today is asking if you trust Trump's cabinet members, Kash Patel and Pam Bondi. We've got an attorney general and a director of the FBI who are going to be pivotal in making sure that when investigations commence and potentially charges, indictments come, that we are able to get convictions, that it's not something where you're throwing out accusations and then it's just kind of political warfare, court of public opinion. I don't want any of that. Do you? Do you want to see the hyper-politicized congressional hearings? They go to the Senate, they go to the House. it's ping pong. It's jarring to watch those questionings, those hearings take place, because the Republicans, they say whatever is politically advantageous to them. They're proving a point, one that I likely agree with. And the Democrats, they just talk about how Trump is Hitler. That's what it just goes back and forth that way. And then at the end, it's like, now what? I guess we just do another one of these things. I think we as a country have very much so identified the fact that there is a two-tier justice system. Democrats, people who are moderates, who saw what the Biden administration did to Donald Trump, what his Justice Department levied to Donald Trump, what the Justice Department did when they came and raided Mar-a-Lago. Everybody knows that the reason that was done is because they despise Donald Trump. They hate him. I believe that they fear him. And I am not 100% sure what there is to be afraid of, other than his questioning of the necessity of a bureaucracy that is unelected in the Democratic Republic that we have. We're not a country that is governed by majority rule. That's not how we function in a constitutional republic. We have a constitution that oversees the rights that are given to us by God, enumerated in those documents. We can't be living in a country where that is for show. Every 2 years, 4 years, we have elections and we put new people in, but really everything kind of stays the same. Really, the important things, you know, I've heard this so many times. You get to Washington, D.C., you're on fire. You are ready to change the direction of the country, to restore it, to improve it, to fundamentally transform it. Whatever your political lean is, you get to Washington, D.C., and you're new and you're fresh and you bring energy that just gets absolutely squashed when you come into your orientations, when you meet the people who actually make the decisions happen, all of the political games that take place. And it's so convoluted, man, isn't it? When you're trying to figure out, good example is the Democrats here just put out, it's called a PQ, I think. It's a vote on the previous question, which included an element that would expose or release whatever, the Epstein files. And the Democrats put this out. If the Republicans would have voted in favor of that, they would have ceded control of the House floor to the Democrats. And then the Democrats, with the control of the House floor, would have been able to do whatever they want. Nobody in their right mind does that. And you know what? The Democrats knew exactly what they were doing when they pushed this out there. They know that Republicans are not going to vote to give up control of the House. And so they attach the Epstein files on it to make sure that people like you and me, who are not, you know, nerd alert about all the procedural systematic things that go through the House of Representatives, all they have to say is every Republican voted against releasing the Epstein files. In a slice of context, that's true. But in the entire context of what took place, that's absolutely ridiculously false. They set these things up so they can use them as political points. And I guarantee if you've got political people of the other lane in your social media, and if you are from the other side and you're listening, and we're very happy to have you, you've probably heard that every Republican in the House voted against releasing the Epstein files. That is not what the vote was. It was a vote on the previous question, and the previous question would have given control to the Democrats, and no Republican sent there by a district of Republican choosing constituents is going to say in that opportunity, yeah, I really think that we do need to release these Epstein files. We'll give the Democrats control over this. That's not why I'm voting for Republicans to go to Congress. None of mine that I vote for ever win. But we're going to work on that, too. But in Missouri, if you're voting to send Jason Smith there, if you're voting to send Ann Wagner, all of the different Burleson, the people we have on this show from time to time from Missouri, do you want the Epstein files released? Probably. You're probably really looking forward to that. Do you want your Republican representatives to vote in favor of giving the Democrats control of the House? Of course you don't. That's the minutiae of how our Congress works. And you're not supposed to know those details. You're not supposed to lean into that. Will Republicans try to pull the same type of games when they're in the minority? Yep, they sure will. You need to know the full story. And then This happened to me multiple times. I was on Facebook. I saw people who are dear to me in my life who don't think the same way that I do. And they are posting on like Facebook in between pictures of kids at their last baseball games of the season and vacation photos and, oh no, back to school posts, that type of stuff. Then there are people who are like, every Republican voted against releasing the Epstein files. And I'm sitting here in the privacy of my own phone going, that's not true. But I'm not telling my friends that on Facebook because that's not why I'm there. We have to be informed people, and we have to look towards our government, our elected government, to act responsibly on the purpose that we sent them there. And we sent Donald Trump as a country, as a majority. We sent Donald Trump to be the president of the United States because we entrusted his wisdom in all of the things that the executive office gets to appoint. And of those, Kash Patel being the director of the FBI, I felt like a lot of people were super pumped for that. When that nomination came through, people who were paying attention to the campaign and kind of know the players, they're like, this is going to get good. Pam Bondi, second nominee to Matt Gaetz. I don't think that out of the gate, everybody was like, oh, Pam Bondi, this is going to be amazing. But she's done a lot of good in her time in office so far. Could she have done better? I feel like maybe yes, but what do I know? I don't know how to do her job. We're entitled as the supreme authority of this country and in partnership with the Constitution to hold the people who we elect accountable. And I think a lot of people right now are at least asking the question that we're asking on YouTube today. Can we still trust the people who have been appointed to do these very, very, very important jobs? The investigation portion of this administration has commenced in a big, bold way. James Comey, John Brennan, these folks are in deep trouble. The investigations have begun into them in a way that I think is going to materialize in some real important fact-finding. Is it going to result in criminal convictions that involve orange jumpsuits and solitary confinement and handcuffs? I have no idea. It seems like it rarely ever does. But the exposure of the deep state is a huge priority for this administration. And we want to know from you if you still trust FBI Director Kash Patel and Attorney General Pam Bondi to do the job. You can go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel and vote. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to ask Hans von Spakovsky about some of the developments that have taken place. There's a real clear investigation story on a little bit more into the Russia hoax. Can you believe it's 2025 and Donald Trump is the president in a second term and we're talking about the Russia hoax? Wow. Who knew that we'd be here? I don't know. Maybe all of you did. Well, we'll have Hans on The Annie Fry Show next. Don't go away. Hold you down and make you cry. Don't you know?
It's a change. Things are going away. President Trump, James Comey and John Brennan, now under criminal investigation related to the Trump-Russia probe. Do you want to see these two guys behind bars?
Well, I know nothing about it other than what I read today, but I will tell you, I think they're very dishonest people. I think they're crooked as hell, and maybe they have to pay a price for that. I believe they are truly bad people and dishonest people. So whatever happens, happens.
He says he knows nothing about it.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
That almost seems kind of like legalese, like, I can't dip my toe in what's going on over there. It has to happen autonomously of the president. When you listen to President Trump talk about Comey and Brennan, I have to imagine that the disgust he has for those people is immeasurable. Let's get to our guest, Hans von Spakovsky, coming up here. Let's talk to our senior legal fellow from the Heritage Foundation, the former FEC commissioner as well. Hans, welcome back. There's so much going on. I could do a whole show with you if you had the time.
Well, that is very true. And you know, what is happening right now is all this classified information is starting to be declassified, including stuff from John Durham's investigation, which basically outlines and exposes what we've all assumed to be the case now for a number of years, which was it wasn't just that the Russia-Trump collusion claim was a hoax, but that the FBI and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence under John Brennan, they weren't actually trying to investigate whether that was true. They knew it was a hoax. They knew it came from the Clinton campaign. They were using federal law enforcement, federal intelligence sources to push this hoax, to do it intentionally to try to damage the Trump presidency. I mean, that's what all of these documents coming out. That's the bottom line with all of them.
So we're speaking with Hans von Spakovsky right now, a legal expert, and I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to speak with you about this particular issue because, Hans, you and I have been talking about this issue for as long as we've been talking to each other. The Russia hoax has been a part of the fabric of the last decade in varying degrees, and you have been spot on, I'm going to say it, 100% of the time. So I think it's important to catch people up who might be a little bit newer to the political game. Just in simple terms, the Russia hoax was this idea that President Trump was working with Russia to steal the election. Is that a good way to sum it up? In 2016, yeah. I might add.
Yes, that's it exactly. And it all came from, the only source for this was what was called the Steele dossier. That was a dossier created by someone working for who? The Hillary Clinton campaign. And it was basically it could have made the fictional bestseller list for the New York Times because it was totally made up. And yet this Steele dossier was what was given to the FBI and others that they used to justify opening and not only opening an investigation, but getting a secret eavesdropping warrant on folks in the Trump campaign. And let's not forget that just a couple of years ago, the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC, which also helped pay for it, they had to pay a fine to who? The Federal Election Commission, where I was formerly a commissioner, because they tried to hide the fact that they had paid for this in the campaign finance reports that they had officially filed with the FEC. So they not only created this false report, they then tried to hide it. And James Comey and others, they knew it was opposition research. They knew it was a hoax, but they used it, like I said, to justify going after the Trump campaign and then the Trump presidency.
And do we know that the intent, we certainly remember the Peter Strzok and Lisa Pages of the world talking about how they would not allow Donald Trump to become the president.
Right.
Do we know that the Comeys and Brennans, you're talking about this dossier, which is a bunch of bologna sausage, that was used not to investigate why would somebody make this up? Why would somebody want to fabricate some sort of fake story to try to throw an election? We should get to the bottom of this. They go, well, this is a bunch of BS here, but we don't have to say that. We can use this BS to go tap the Donald Trump campaign and listen in on the things that he's doing. So when all of this stuff comes together, do we know, does Comey ever admit what he was doing, or was he just smart about it and attached to it? Was Brennan ever public in communication or anything that they were trying to stop Donald Trump?
There's some indications of that in the internal emails, but publicly they have denied completely that they did anything wrong. And by the way, you know, part of what apparently they want to declassify, and this is something that was attached to the Inspector General's review of the FBI's probe of, remember Clinton's unsecured email server, you know, the one she set up in her house,
yes,
through which she was running all her official communications. Well, sources say that this classified information details how foreign actors, in other words, foreign intelligence agents got access to classified material because they got access to her email, but yet the FBI didn't investigate that security breach. Instead, they were more interested in how did these foreign actors get into the Hillary campaign. And Peter Strzok, who you mentioned, you know, he was exchanging emails with his lover, who was another FBI employee, saying, "Ew, we can't do anything that might upset Hillary Clinton because she's going to be president." So they deliberately ignored the security breaches that Hillary Clinton engineered.
Hans von Spakovsky speaking with us right now, legal expert with Heritage Foundation. So this is all stuff we've discussed before. It's kind of catching everybody up on where we are right now. I'm holding in my hand a report from Real Clear Investigations. Exclusive secret meeting opens document floodgates on Trump-Russia hoax. My question to you is, all of this is old news. It seems like we've, you know, had the Durham report. We've gone through the assessment of what happened. Why are we talking about this in 2025?
Well, because even with the Durham report, and they mentioned this in the Real Clear Investigations, there's a lot of documents that were classified and have never been released. And for folks who say, oh, this is old news, you don't need to know about it, here's what they need to realize. I cannot think of a greater danger and greater corruption than the misuse of the FBI and our intelligence agencies for political purposes to target a political opponent. Look, I worked at the Justice Department. People need to understand. The Justice Department, the FBI, they are the most powerful law enforcement agencies in this country. They can destroy you as a human being. They can destroy your personal life, your professional life. And we have to ensure that everyone and anyone who is involved in abusing their positions inside either the FBI, the Justice Department, or these intelligence agencies for political purposes, they have got to be exposed. And even if it's too late for them to be criminally prosecuted because the statute of limitations has run, they need to be exposed publicly so they can be fired, terminated, and we can ensure that they never, ever hold a position of public trust in the government again.
Amen. Amen to all of that. I'm looking forward to seeing where this investigation goes. And I know there are a lot of people who are going to be like, that's old news, but we do need to know. We need to expose everything that has to do with what they tried to do to Donald Trump and probably continue to try to do even up to this day. Before we let you go, Hans von Spakovsky with us, I did want to ask you a little bit about the Epstein. That's been a head story for this week. President Trump kind of strangely coming out and being like, it's a nothing burger and stop talking about it. And everyone's like, we're not going to stop talking about it. There is talk about a special counsel that could take over this case. And I think that when people hear that, it's unclear for a lot of non-legal minds to understand, well, what does that even mean? How could a special counsel be put in charge of this? And what would that mean for the Epstein story to continue to be investigated?
A special counsel is when the Attorney General of the United States takes someone who is a current lawyer at the Justice Department, usually a U.S. attorney, in a particular state, and assigns them the task, the special task, of investigating a particular incident. And while that special counsel, a U.S. attorney, still reports to the AG, usually the AG says, look, I'm going to keep my hands off of this to avoid any questions of potential political bias or political influence. And you investigate this almost like you're independent. But ultimately, it is once that special counsel does their job, they report to the attorney general, and the attorney general decides, one, whether their report should be publicly released, and two, if the special counsel makes a recommendation for criminal prosecution, whether that will be carried out. I'm just not sure whether that's needed in this instance. Because I'm not quite sure what documents are there still that haven't been released, and are there really lists that everybody thinks exist that may not exist, because I think I'm probably as confused as a lot of other people are about what exactly is going on with this.
If Hans is confused, we're screwed. I need you to understand these things. Real quick before we let you go, though, on the Epstein case, there's something that the president keeps saying. I got two questions about the president and his role right now in talking about this story. The first thing is there a legal benefit for the president in his capacity as the president of the United States to distance himself from anything that has to do with investigations that might be going on? Is his telling people to not talk about it anymore and to move on, is there a legal reason why he would want to separate himself from the investigation that could be still taking place?
Yeah, because it avoids anybody saying, oh, a particular investigation was stopped or started for political reasons. If the president says, look, I'm divorcing myself from this and I'm not going to have anything to do with it, it's going to be up to the, you know, Attorney General, the Justice Department, to decide what to do. So that's the advantage of that. We will recall, however, that in the cases we were just talking about, Barack Obama kept saying he had nothing to do with any of this, you know, Crossfire, Hurricane, et cetera. But we now know that he had secret meetings. He and Joe Biden had secret meetings with Comey and others in the White House about it.
So then to kind of wrap this whole segment up together, if you have Comey and Brennan, who are corrupt individuals, and we can have evidence that suggests that already, along with the Peter Strzoks and the Lisa Pages of the world, people who are part of the deep state, who are willing to fabricate information that they can then use, knowing that it's fabricated, to spy on American citizens. If all of that is in existence, and these are just the people that we know about, is it reasonable to think that the Epstein files, whatever that boogeyman in the closet is, whatever the Epstein files are, is it reasonable to question whether or not people who have had access to those files could have corrupted those files in their possession within the deep state's knowledge, but a very limited amount of people, so that when the president continues to repeat the word, we've released credible documents, that there's an implication that maybe some of that information has been tampered with?
I don't know the answer to that, because I don't know who had possession of those files before this president came into office. And it's important for everybody to remember that, look, Pam Bondi, Donald Trump, they've only been in office for a couple of months. So for all these past decade, who has had these files? Well, it was the Biden administration that had access to it. Before that, it was Obama. Trump for a little while, but it's really the Biden administration that had access to this. So I have no idea what happened to those files during the time the Biden administration was in office.
Well, I hope that we continue to find out more information about this. Hope the president doesn't get at least what he's saying publicly his way, because I think a lot of us are not done with this story as much as he's saying that he would like us to be done with it. We appreciate you, Hans. Thanks for being here. We look forward to having you back.
Sure thing. Take care.
You as well. Bye-bye. Hans von Spakovsky is a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, a former FEC commissioner and a DOJ lawyer. His latest book, he hosts a Case in Point, the legal show for regular people, which is really what we try to glean out of him here. And his book, Our Broken Elections, How the Left Changed the Way You Vote, is a must read. We'll take a quick break. Ethan's going to come join us here in just a minute. He's got Wiggins America coming up for us as well. And his subject for today is effective ways to improve work performance. I wonder if this was given to him by Ryan as well. We'll have to ask him. Don't go away. We'll be right back. So last night, this crazy, crazy thing happened in my house. It was the wildest thing ever. I was home by myself for like 60 minutes.
Did you even know what to do with yourself?
No. No. And I got 30 minutes in. I'm like, I kind of miss people. And I was like, slap myself across the face, be like, snap out of it and enjoy it right now. Sorry.
Get yourself together.
There are times when I'm sitting in my house and the noise level, I'm about ready to snap. And I just think that any person who doesn't live in that existence, or maybe it's been a long time since you had kids in your house, if you came in, you'd be like, how do you do this? There's people, I mean, when you got four kids spanning age ranges of 15, almost 13 in a week, 9 and 4, they're all in different life phases. So they're all reacting to things at different emotional maturity levels. I don't know. Jensen and Charlie are probably about the same maturity level, but that's just teenage, middle school girls and high school boys. But people are fighting and they're chasing each other and we're trying to scare each other and we're laughing and we're yelling. I mean, there are times where Jared and I will just look at each other across the house and be like, I don't know if we can do this much longer. Kids, go play outside.
I bet the silence was deafening last night.
It was. I watched two things last night on television that I can't believe. I was shocked myself in my home by myself with just the two dogs. I watched some of the ESPYs, and I watched the Liberty Fever game. And Caitlin Clark is out with an injury. She wasn't even in.
And you still watched it?
Yes.
But Liberty, but why?
A, I like basketball. I don't watch the NBA. I'm uninterested in that. I would rather watch the WNBA than the NBA.
Any WNBA game or a Caitlin Clark specific game? Or an Indiana Fever game?
Yep.
Okay.
Any, but especially Caitlin Clark. Apparently she just withdrew from the All-Star Weekend. She's got a grain. You guys don't care about that. The point is, I think the Liberty ended up beating the Fever without Caitlin Clark like 98-75 or something like that.
Fever won or they lost?
They lost.
Okay.
Without Caitlin Clark. Would they have won with her? Maybe. I don't know.
Isn't the Liberty like the best team in the league though?
I think I remember I looked and their record was like 16-5. So they're good.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
But they were hitting threes from all over the place. And I thought, well, this is kind of interesting because you would think that if Caitlin Clark's out of the game, that it's just a bunch of missed layups.
Right.
Which is what I'm used to. But so I watched it and I was actually entertained by it. But I feel like from an entertainment standpoint for people who've been exposed to the WNBA now because of Caitlin Clark, that there is a little bit of interest in the game for what it is. When you watched Iowa in the championship game against South Carolina, was it? The girls' NCAA championship that like quadrupled or something the amount of people who watched the men's game. UConn was in the championship for the men and somebody else, maybe. I don't even remember.
Purdue.
Yeah, because that's the year I had my great bracket.
Second place in like the country.
On Yahoo's bracket. Yeah,
that's crazy. Wild. In our my son's bracket challenge. What Caitlin Clark, the light that Caitlin Clark has shined onto the WNBA has benefited the league. And it's just amazing how much hate she still continues to get. I think the WNBA loves it. I think Caitlin Clark loves it. I don't think that when Sophie Cunningham, a lot of you who don't watch the WNBA but maybe on Twitter or X or whatever, you probably saw the clip where Caitlin Clark, like a pinball, gets bounced off of these girls. Some girl smacks her in the face and pokes her in the eye, and she jumps. She's carrying the ball. She jumps back and she holds her eye. Another girl comes and bumps into her while she's got her eyes closed, and then another girl comes in and trucks her over and knocks her over. The next play down the court or whatever, Sophie Cunningham, which, folks, she is stunningly beautiful.
She's my WNBA crush.
Correct?
Oh, my gosh.
Boys, Ethan, you can't just nod your head in affirmation.
Ring that bell, Ethan.
With that face. His face is saying, mm-hmm.
The bell has been rang.
She's,
ooh, girl.
She's runway model beautiful.
And a Mizzou product.
Correct. She's tough as nails. Caitlin Clark gets trucked, and then you have Sophie Cunningham. The next time they get a breakaway, she's like, I'm putting this girl in the ground. I'm putting her in the floor. And she did it. And then she stood over like, you going to do that again? And everybody's like, I'm reading the comments on social media and people are like, if this keeps happening, I'm going to have to start watching the WNBA. People can't believe that this is what's happening in the WNBA. And I am here to say, as somebody who played basketball, and yes, always girls basketball, through my senior year of high school, I was a power forward and drastically undersized in my position. At 5'8", and who has helped coach girls basketball for years now at the junior high level, people cannot believe how rough and mean these WNBA games are. Folks, this is how girls play basketball. It is super physical. And if you're comparing I'm not asking a single person listening right now to like, oh no, trust me, go watch the WNBA. I am stepping in for a minute to say that what it has to offer cannot be compared to the NBA. It is like baseball to softball. It's a different sport. When I have been forced to watch any minutes of the NBA, I am so disinterested in watching seven people run halfway down the floor in between the three-point line to just throw up threes over and over and over again. That's not interesting for me to watch. Maybe it is for NBA fans. But the style of basketball in the NBA is not even the style of basketball that I used to love to watch in the 90s, growing up a Bulls girl. Transfer over to the WNBA, and they're not doing what the NBA is doing. Although, if you just want to talk about shooting and hitting threes, I would venture to say that at least the Caitlin Clarks of the world, and there is only one, are doing something that is entertainment-worthy on the WNBA court. But folks, when you watch and you see how mean these girls are, I've got one piece of advice for any officials that are out there right now who have ever stepped foot on a basketball floor that girls are playing on. I have conversations with officials all the time. I try to get to know them ahead of time, try to be on the same page with them, appreciate them for coming out, because I've done volleyball officiating. My husband has in the past. He hasn't since Charlie's been playing baseball. He's done softball as well. There is no amount of money that you could pay me to ref a basketball game.
Ooh, no way.
Everybody, you are the dumbest person that everybody has met. From the second they walk in and see you in stripes, they're like, I hate that person. Yeah. And then they yell at you from the stands, the coaches, and then the kids see that the coaches and the fans are yelling, and then the kids are like, nope, not doing it. Officials for girls' basketball games, and the good officials know this. This is kind of like teachers. Good teachers cannot stand bad teachers. Mm-hmm. Good cops cannot stand bad cops. Good officials cannot stand bad officials. The amount of times over the course of decades of being in girls' basketball that I've had conversations with officials and been like, you know, talking about, yeah, it gets pretty physical out there. They'll say things like, oh, you know, girls. If you go onto a basketball floor and referee them like they're girls and not athletes, this is what you get in the mm-hmm. WNBA. You get a bunch of people who are, the word is thugs, and that is a multiracial participation, Sophie Cunningham being the example I'm using at the top of this. These girls, they're hard. They are battle-tested. And the WNBA is, like, I actually think for the first time ever that if the WNBA does honestly the smart thing and throws a little bit of WWE into the WNBA and lets these girls, like, you're signing a, there's a risk with working in the WNBA. If they continue to foster this, people are going to start watching.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be because of the basketball.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
It's going to be because of the stuff that happens in between the whistles.
Kind of related, kind of not. Sophie Cunningham the last few days has been popping up on my my people you may know on Facebook.
Uh-huh. You and got some Mizzou connections that are like...
I got a couple, and I haven't done it. I don't know Sophie Cunningham, but I'm like...
Give me your phone, I'll do it for you right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
You can totally be like, oh no, that wasn't me. That
Annie
was,
did it.
That was Annie, and she's a huge fan. Ad friend. Done!
Literally, it's just, she's just been popping up the last few days.
You got four mutuals.
Yeah, I
look
do
at
have
how pretty she is, folks. Where's the camera? Oh, she's so pretty. And she's my kind of girl. Every basketball coach wants a Sophie Cunningham.
We're sending up lobs.
Yes, we want Caitlin Clark. Give me one of those, but give me a Sophie Cunningham, because Sophie Cunningham is going to make Caitlin Clark more open.
Please accept my friend request, Sophie Cunningham.
Think she listens to the show? I don't. Wiggins America next. Don't go away. No, I can't have nothing because I got my head up in the clouds. I'll bite up anything that I can chew.
not Wiggins America. Ethan's America. Ethan's America.
Oh, it's so sad.
The only
no
reason,
Ryan, just Ethan.
The only reason I haven't walked out in protest yet is because I think it would probably have more of an effect on you and
it
Brad than it would on Ryan.
It would only have an effect on me, and it would please Ryan.
It'd be exactly what he wanted.
So I think that as he's creating this, this was kind of what his thought was. Like, he's like trying to completely sabotage.
Yeah, he's the topic of conversation every time.
He wants to make sure that when he's gone, his presence is missed.
Do you know what the disappointed is from?
No.
I don't either.
Yep.
What?
It's from Hercules. That's Kevin Sorbo. There's a scene in Hercules where...
Like, wait, really?
The Hercules, the Legendary Journeys or whatever.
Yeah.
The live action one, there's a point where he just looks up. It was a meme. Disappointed! And then people would use that as a meme whenever they were upset with
Thanks,
something.
Ryan. What do you got for today?
Ways to improve your work performance. Honestly, this is the show that Ryan needs to be here for.
We'll just tell him to podcast the show.
Yeah, we'll make sure that we get this clipped and sent to him because this is going to be important. Maybe we could quiz him tomorrow.
I think for Wiggins America. When he comes back, I don't know if he's going to have some grievances to air, but I have shared with him some of our YouTube shorts, specifically the one that we talked about when we discussed bumper peeing, and you had your mind blown. Yes, exactly. That one ends with a little bit of a Ryan dig, and I sent it to him. And I'm like, I just wanted to let you know that we did this so that while you're gone, I hope you still think this is funny. We miss you. He said he did.
Debatable. Okay, way number one to improve work performance, quit multitasking and start focusing.
Focus.
Annie, I know you are a big hater. Right, you don't like multitasking. You don't like when people multitask, though, do you?
I like when people... You have to prioritize tasks. I actually function better as a multitasker. I do two or three things better. Because otherwise, if I'm doing one thing, I daydream. My brain goes to multitasking. Hmm. But if you can't multitask, then don't. Lock in, get it done, move to the next thing.
According to statistics, doesn't say which ones. Multitasking reduces productivity by 40%. 40%! That number kind of blew my mind. It is important to prioritize tasks and avoid wasting time trying to complete all tasks at once. Doing so may cause the quality of work to be reduced. Multitasking often causes you to continuously redirect your attention from one task to another and in between short attention spans.
What else you got?
Reason number two, limit distractions. It is important to reduce or eliminate any distractions that can distract you from finishing tasks on time. A few actionable tips that it gives in order to avoid getting distracted, turn your phone off or put it on do not disturb.
That's like where all my work is.
That's the problem, right?
I would have nothing to do.
Do you find, though, that when you're on your phone, it leads to, even this one leaking into the other one, to multitasking, right? Because you're doing one thing, trying to do work,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden you get a buzz or a notification.
I've checked Twitter to see if like the news is going bonkers or anything like that on my phone, and I will immediately close the app to open Twitter to check and see if anything is going on and realize I just did that.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
It's like, whenever I do that, I'm like, ooh, I have a problem. Need to correct this.
Work from a quiet space. If you're working from home, establish a workspace dedicated to only working. That would be a huge issue for me. And then use a time tracking tool, it says, to keep track of the time taken to complete the task.
Nah, I'd forget to check it.
Very set on improving your work performance, Annie.
I'm always interested in improving my work performance. But I have to multitask. A lot of people are saying that, too. Like, that's the only way
it's
I get stuff
option.
Done.
Yeah.
Fox Business reporter Jerry Willis next. Don't go away.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.